And then this is what it comes right down to. Well, who in the world are you? What do you mean? In what sense can the convictions be personal? If the person who's governing, who's supposed to be you as far as we know, it doesn't have anything to do with those convictions. See, brothers and sisters, this again, this is a fantasy. This is an absurdity. This is a, you know, we're in the clouds again. This mystical, magical, you know, compartmentalization of the human person. Or the me that's over here and the me that's over there. Well, if you can split it in terms of your personal private life versus your public life, if you can split it as to whether you're sitting in your office or sitting in your living room, then you might as well be able to split it in regard to whether it's Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday or Friday. For that matter, you might as well be able to split it whether it's a.m. or p.m. on the same day. Right? I mean, if you're going to start splitting your personal convictions from the things you're doing, well, the sky's the limit. You know, split things all over the place. This makes no sense. And it puts, what this ultimately is a defense mechanism for people to escape from their own responsibility. I mean, we can all do this, we'd have a lot of fun. You know, I'll believe that certain things are wrong today, and you know, tomorrow I'll change my mind. It doesn't work. And it's not safe, and it's not fair to the rest of us. Challenge them, brothers and sisters, and I ask you to challenge them. Now, I'm not talking, by the way, here, about just challenging those in government office who are pro-abortion. I'm talking about challenging all of us, pro-life and pro-abortion, to do something about this problem. And the first practical thing that we need to do in challenging our leaders is to vote for those who defend life. If we can't keep in office those who defend the ultimate rights of the human person for which government was instituted to defend, if we as a people can't do that, then we have lost the ability to govern ourselves. Go back to the words of the Declaration. The government, it derives its power from the consent of the governed. If a people can no longer tell right from wrong, they can't govern themselves, and the system that we have won't work. We've got to place and keep in office those who know the difference between right and wrong, but they won't be able to get in office unless the people voting for them know the difference between right and wrong. Now, in regard to this, especially when you have, and now I'm speaking in specific reference to the Catholic Church, you have some prominent Catholic leaders who are pro-abortion. Now, what do you think is one of the questions I often get? Well, why don't they get excommunicated? Well, it's a very important question. And there are a lot of ways to deal with people who are acting contrary to the teachings of the Church. The style of leadership nowadays is not to use the penalties of excommunication, even though they could rightly be used. We don't know clearly what goes on behind the scenes. There could be lots of things going on behind the scenes in terms of personal challenges and meetings with these individuals. So, and by the way, the bottom line is that the people who have the authority to do the excommunicating, the bishops, we're not in their shoes. So it's not easy to be a bishop, and I wouldn't want to have to make these particular judgments. But I asked the Cardinal from Rome one time, who was visiting in the United States, what his thought was when people would be coming to me and saying, oh, you know, a lot of them in the Church take action and just excommunicate these people. You know what he said? Here in America, you have a way to deal with that. Vote them out. That was his answer. Get them out of office. If we were talking about a person who's in a particular office that, under a system of government where they're in there for life, well, maybe it'll be a different story. But this goes back to what he was doing. He was pointing us back to the very system that we have, namely that it's in our hands. Now, besides deciding who's going to serve in the office in the first place, we have to get those who are in office to ask the right question. We can't give the right answer to the abortion controversy unless we ask the right question. Now, I have a few letters here from some of our government leaders in response to letters that were written to them on pro-life. Here's one from Mr. Clinton. Thank you for your letter concerning a woman's right to choose. What do you notice about that first statement? That first statement has nothing to do with what I wrote him about. That's the problem. If I was writing about a woman's right to choose, well, then I'd be very appreciative of a response like this. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the killing of children. I'm not talking about a woman's right to choose. But you notice that it's not even a woman's right to choose abortion, which just grammatically and by means of, you know, by diction would make a little bit more sense. But here he leaves the verb hanging here. Isn't choose a transitive verb? You choose something? It has become an intransitive verb without an object. You know, it's like choice floating around in the sky. If you're giving a pro-life talk, let me show you a great thing to do. I say, folks, we all have the right to choose, right? That's a great freedom and wonderful capacity. In fact, it's so great, I think we should do it right here and now. On the count of three, I want you to exercise your right to choose. We're all going to choose together. You ready? One, two, three, choose. Now, isn't that great? That was just fabulous. I just do that all night long, you know. And it's the reaction you get. People look at you funny or they laugh and say, well, what are we laughing about? It doesn't make any sense. There's no such thing as choice by itself. It's like saying, oh, the right to think, you know. I'm pro-thought, you know. Well, for goodness sake, what are you thinking about, you know? You're always thinking about something. Maybe you're thinking about thinking, or you're thinking about thought, but it's a thought. It's not just something detached in the air. Maybe that's why Douglas is talking about recognizing the air as a person. All this philosophy is so airy, you know, it's empty. It doesn't make sense. Choose. Well, Mr. President, what are you talking about here? A woman's right to choose. If you're talking about abortion, why don't you say a woman's right to an abortion? Well, why don't you just come out and say it? No. Veiled, it's covered, it's mystified, it's over-spiritualized. They don't want to talk about dismemberment. They don't want to talk about decapitation. The doctor who wrote the textbook on how to do abortions, Dr. Warren Hearn, I have the textbook right here with me. It's called Abortion Practice. Dr. Warren Hearn, Boulder, Colorado. He, at least, is honest enough in the book while he's describing the procedure to use the words dismemberment and decapitation. But our friends in high office, they don't want to talk about dismemberment. They want to talk about a woman's right to choose. Whatever that means. Now, another one of these letters here from one of our members of Congress. Much of this argument is intricately linked to a deeply held philosophical and/or religious belief on when life begins. I wonder if he was in on that other discussion that I quoted for you a little while ago. Religious belief, you know. I'm not going to do it science, but then listen to what he says. I won't begin to consider this question. I won't begin to consider this question. When life begins, in other words. Well then, excuse me, but how are you going to exercise a public office to protect life if you don't even know who you're supposed to protect? Not only do you not know who you're supposed to protect, you don't even want to find out. You don't belong in office, I'm sorry. Now this qualifies a person from legitimately exercising public office, in my opinion. Now, we have to get them to ask and face the right question. Now, this goes for those in government leadership and also for the general public. Because a lot of the problem when it comes to abortion is not just that people give different answers, but they ask different questions. And they think that the question is, should this woman be forced to have another child? Or should she have another child? And very, very often, those who will be arguing with you in conversation about abortion will bring forth the reasons why this woman should not have another child, right? She's not mature, she's not ready to be a mother, she doesn't have the financial resource, or the spousal support, or she's got to get through her education or her career, or this or that or the other thing, but all reasons why she shouldn't have a child. Now, let's ask this question. Are there reasons why a woman should not have a child in certain circumstances? Of course there are. Is the answer to the question, should she have a child, sometimes no? Of course it is. There can be medical reasons, financial reasons, psychological reasons, social reasons, why a woman should not have a child. Of course. But that's not the question when it comes to abortion. Here the question is different. It's not a question of, should I have a child? The question is, should I kill a child? Well, we can't even get people to ask the right question here. We're never going to get the right answer. See, and they think when they hear us say, don't kill a child, that translates into their mind, keep having children. No matter what the circumstances, therefore, you people are unrealistic, therefore I'm not even going to listen to you. But no, we do realize there are circumstances where someone shouldn't have another child. All we're saying is, you don't kill a child that already exists. And there's the point. If she's pregnant, the child exists. Now, you don't solve this problem by pretending he doesn't exist, but that's what our government is doing. That's exactly what our government is doing. Pretending the child doesn't exist. Now, we sometimes inadvertently reinforce this idea that the child in the womb is not really a child by the way we talk about pregnant women. I give you this as a practical suggestion, brothers and sisters, to strengthen your pro-life witness. Even good pro-life people talk this way, and it doesn't reflect at all on their convictions, but I hear it all the time. Well, let me illustrate what I mean. A woman is pregnant, what do we sometimes say? She's going to be a mother. Isn't that interesting? Is she going to be a mother? When? You know, she is one already, right? I'm expecting another child. Well, gee, how do you know that? You know, how do you know that? Maybe you're expecting, if you're expecting something, that means you don't have it yet. If you're expecting a package, do you have the package? You don't have it and expect it at the same time, right? No, you're not expecting anything. You've got the child. Isn't it a marvelous thing to become a mother before you even know it? Right? When do you become a mother? When the child starts to exist. That's when you become a mother. That's when you have reproduced. All right. There's no such thing as an expectant parent. I'm not even going to have a child. I'm going to bring a child into the world. Well, what world is the child in now? Your womb is in the world. The child is in the world. And the best is, ma'am, how many children do you have? Two and one on the way. On the way from where? You know? How many children do you have? Two and half. Half, you know. What the half? That's exactly the message that we're trying to counteract. This is not half a child. This is not a child on the way, coming from some other world. This is a brother, a sister, already here, in full possession of his or her human dignity and rights, and equally deserving of protection as the rest of us. So, again, our language has to reflect the reality of what's going on here. When people can ask the right questions, now we can get more of them, not all of them, but more of them, to give the right answer, including those in government office. Now, finally, some practical tips about talking with these people. When you start dealing with representatives and senators and people in office, find out who their aide is who covers the abortion issue. Very, very important. Because it is the aide who is responsible for this particular set of concerns that we have who is the one who's going to be advising the person in office. They don't have time to be reading through and investigating and sorting out for themselves all the different aspects of all the different issues that they have to vote on, right? It's impossible. So, this aide is doing the research for them, is getting the input for them, is making the best judgment as they can, and then giving them advice. So as important as talking to the person in office himself or herself is talking to the legislative aide who covers the abortion issue. Ask who it is, find out their name, and talk with them and or meet with them. Now, when you have meetings, whether with the aide or with the representative, brothers and sisters, sometimes we go into these offices and we get these people right off the hook. And you know how we do that? We get two or three of us pro-lifers going in there, sitting down with this person, and the two or three of us do all the talking. Have you ever seen this happen? Have you been involved in these kind of meetings? We start, you know, 1%, I mean, and it comes from the fact that we have so much conviction, and we have so much knowledge, we just want to go in there and share it with them. So we go in there, and we're talking to one collector, talking to the other one, saying, hey, yeah, he's right about that, and you know what else, and this, and they go on talking to this, third one chimes in, before you know it, the time you have with the person is over, and all the person has done all that time is sit there, look at you, smile, and nod their head, yes, and I see, I understand, I'm listening, easy for that. Go in there, ask one or two tough questions, and then shut up. And look at them right in the eye. And keep looking with your mouth closed until they give an answer. I'm going to go in for this pro-abortion representative from back in New York. She puts herself forward as so concerned about women's rights. I'm going to say, if you're concerned about women's rights, as I trust that you are, have you taken the time and trouble to adequately study the many pieces of research that have been done showing the harmful effects of abortion physically and psychologically on the women of our country? Period. Amen. Keep quiet. Let her do the talking. You know? So we get them off the hook too easily. It may make us feel a little bit uncomfortable to, you know, have that silence. But, you know, when they start talking and explaining to us their position and the basis for it, then they are forced to think it through. You're not necessarily forced to think something through if you're just sitting there listening to somebody else talk. That is a practical tip here that I recommend. As far as what to talk to them about, we are deeply religious people. They may themselves profess some religious beliefs, but my recommendation would be talk to them on the basis, purely secular basis, particularly on the basis of the harm that abortion inflicts, not only on the mother, but on our whole society. Now, there's a book coming out about this. It is out already. Some of you may have read it. It's called The Cost of Abortion. It's by Lawrence Roberge. The Cost of Abortion is a very helpful book to get a hold of, because what he has done is taken government information and documents and statistics and studies to show the impact that 22 years of legalized abortion is having on things like the economy, on things like our whole social system. And these are things that people in office are likely to pay some attention to, rather than an argument about the fact that the baby at the moment of conception really is a human being like the rest of us. And certainly more than an appeal to them from the basis of religious belief. Not that we are ashamed of that, not that we don't talk about that, but in meetings with these people, link the abortion issue to something that they are at the same time very concerned about, like the example I just used about this woman. If they claim to be very concerned about women's rights and women's health, then talk about that and show how abortion impacts on that. And then persevere. So many times I talk to pro-lifers around the country and say, gee, have you talked to your legislator about this, that, or the other topic? And they say, well, yeah. Or, well, what do you mean, yeah? I say, well, we met with them, you know, about a year ago on this particular topic. Well, what was the outcome? Well, they took some information from us and said they were going to read it, but we haven't seen them do anything about it. Well, have you gotten back to them and asked them if they read it? See, sometimes, again, we let them off the hook too easily. They will often accept, and I don't think there's hardly any of us ever any time that they will not will refuse to even take something that you give them to read. They'll just not always accept it. So then follow up. Gee, you know, I gave it that thing a few months ago to read. Gee, have you had a chance to read it? I understand that you're busy, but I'd really like to get your opinion on it. Oh, gee, no, I haven't had time to read it. I got, okay, I'll get back to you in another 2 months. Let them know you are going to follow up. You are going to persevere. You're going to be on top of them. And on and on and on. Just keep, don't write these people off. Just like the people in the media. Same thing. Same thing. You know, a lot of times in pro-life circles, there's a lot of complaints. You know, all the media is, you know, not on our side. They don't understand us. They don't represent us the right way. Yeah, but when's the last time you went and had lunch with some of these people? Get to know them. Let them get to know you. Very, very crucial. maybe the reason why any bias that there is happening is because those who are doing the reporting have gotten invitations from people on the other side and have gotten to know them, and they've taken them to lunch, and they've explained their projects and their ideas and their motivations, but for white people have not. And I've seen a lot of good results happen when some of those basic human relationships can be established, and they will see for themselves that we are not the kind of people that some of the stereotypes make us out to be. Now, how do you respond, and we often get this response, especially from local political leaders, how do you respond to the person who says, well, abortion has nothing to do with my particular office? You've gotten this, right? Why are you asking me about abortion? I don't make any decisions about that. The reason we're asking you about it is twofold. First of all, people in lower political office move up to higher office from there. And who's to say that you're not going to be in a position where you are going to have to decide about this? We don't want anybody in those positions who decides the wrong way about this. So we're starting now to make sure you think the right way. Well, the second reason is this has as much to do with your office as does your respect for any human person. Isn't that right? Aren't these just as much human persons as anybody else? It is impossible that human life is sacred under some circumstances, but not sacred under other circumstances. It is either sacred always across the board, or it isn't sacred at all. There is no middle ground. And if we claim to have respect for anybody, in any circumstance, then that means we are saying that everybody is sacred. People in government office have a heavy responsibility. Brothers and sisters, they too are our brothers and sisters. We do not sit in judgment on them. We approach them rather because we are really on their side. Don't let the office or the decisions or the statements they may make, which may very well be quite wrong and quite harmful and sometimes quite silly, but don't let that obscure the fact that they are our brothers and sisters. And we go to them because precisely we are concerned as much about them as we are about any unborn child, as much about them as we are about each other. And we pray for them. By the way, this reminds me of Someone faxed me a cartoon at the time when, last year or so, when President Clinton met with the Pope over at the Vatican. I don't know if some of you may have seen this cartoon, but they faxed to me. Here's the President and his aide coming out of the halls of the Vatican, and you see the big pillars and, you know, on the tops of the Vatican. So he's walking down the steps, and the aide turns to him and says, So how did it go with the Pope? And Clinton has a long face on, and he says, I have to say 6 billion Hail Marys. Pray for our brothers and sisters in political office. The pressures, the burdens, the confusion, we don't know. We don't know what it's like. Pray for them. Communicate with them. And let's look forward to today, when precisely because this is a government that derives its powers from the consent of the governed, and precisely because the governed will not be fooled forever, precisely because if you go far enough down a dead end for long enough time, guess what? You're going to see for yourself that it's a dead end. And that's what we're doing with abortion, isn't it? And if we keep going down this road, you know what's going to turn it around? You know what's going to turn abortion around? Abortion is. That's what's going to turn it around. Abortion itself is going to turn the situation around. Because we're going to go far enough down the dead end to realize, hey folks, they were right. It is a dead end. And then enough people will start turning around and going back the other way down the road, and they'll tell the other people that are still on their way, hey folks, don't bother going down that way. It's a dead end. That's going to happen. And all we have to do is make sure it happens sooner rather than later, so that there's fewer casualties. But that's going to happen. Be assured. And those then who are governed will again save a government founded on the principle that all are equal, and that this very government exists to secure their right to life. Let us look forward to that day, and then we will have a banquet again in our lifetime, and it will be one of victory and of celebration. There was a government official who took his 12-year-old daughter to a memorial of the Holocaust. And as they were walking through, she was holding his hand and didn't say a word. And as they went from one gruesome display to the next, outlining these atrocities, she held his hand tighter and tighter. And he wasn't quite sure what was going on in her mind or if he was getting the message. But when they came to the end of the tour, it was a guest book there where you could write your name, and then there was a column for comments. And this little girl wrote her name, and as Daddy was looking over her shoulder, she wrote in the section in the comments words that convinced him that yes, she did get the message, because her words were, "Why didn't somebody do something?" And the day will come when history will look back at this abortion tragedy when our nation, for a time, has gone off the track of the Declaration of Independence. History will look back at this tragedy, but it will also look back at you. And they will not say, "Why didn't somebody do something?" They will say, "Thank God, somebody did something. Keep doing it, and God bless you."